Mini episode 618 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 618. It's your self-professed world's greatest football talkers, Rick Morris and Kyle Ross, here to break it down for you. We have NFL Week 6 on the agenda today, and I have to say there's been a lot that's gone on in the FDH Lounge between Week 5 and Week 6. Both Bob Barker and Robert Flores. I'm hard-pressed to wonder what might happen between our Week 6 and our Week 7 taping. Maybe Rand Paul and the Pope. Who knows at the rate we're going here, but we've been getting a lot of luminaries coming into the lounge. We'd like to keep it that way. Speaking of luminaries, I have sort of had the record of one so far this year, at least to a pretty decent extent. 8-6 last week on all the picks, 3-0 on my big three, first time this year, I believe, 1-0 on my lock pick. That brings me to 43-33-1 for the year, 10-5 on my big three, 3-2 on my locks, the worst percentage of the bunch, paradoxically. Another good week for Kyle, 3-2, 18-11 thus far. Kyle, you are also killing it in the profitability, my man.
Rand Paul and the Pope, huh? I think I know where I sit on that spectrum, right in the middle, I think. So, is that what we're supposed to be talking about on this show until Week 6? Because in our little pre-show meeting there before, I don't think we touched on one single iota of football. So allow me to
turn the mic on and let it fly.
Yeah, okay.
That's what we'd like to do.
Hey, you know, I'll say this about last week, though. How ironic that it was I burned by a couple of favorites last week. Both losses. I took three favorites last week. Pretty uncharacteristic. Lost two of them, both dogs coming through. And this week, Rick Morris, is a little bit of a teaser. I promise one of the great shockers in the four-year history of this program. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. Much like I was pleasantly surprised about you taking Washington last week.
Yeah, it panned out that way, and it's funny because you texted me that today, and I immediately had to try guessing which two they were, and you ruled those out, and what's interesting is if it's not those two, and if it's not any of my big three, then ironically, I may end up going the other way on a game that's very uncharacteristic for you, so we may have a little bit of Freaky Friday going on here.
Well, it's funny. First of all, it actually is one of your big three, just to maybe help you along there. Number B as well. You know what's funny? I thought about this after I hung up last week. We've been agreeing a lot on this program, except for your big three. Have you noticed that? Like, I feel you've really come around on the ugly dog, but yet you still have the crutch of the favorite when it comes to your big three and lock. So we shall see this week how things play out. I know that I agree with one of your big three, and I disagree with one of your big three. And the disagree, I was fully ready to disagree when I saw the line come out. So I don't like this card, full disclosure. I think, you know, you've talked about how last two or three weeks how you haven't liked the card. This, to me, by far, was one of the more difficult cards to choose this all year, and as a result, I only have four recommendations this week, which I believe is a season low for me.
See, what's interesting with me is I don't necessarily dislike this card as I have the past several. Then again, I've been above water the last several weeks, so maybe me hating the card is a good sign for me. Maybe you hating the card is a good sign for you. I'll tell you this, though, on my big three and on any divergence, I always like to say, you know, there's times when the public's not always wrong. And again, I'm ten and five on my big three. So when I say I have the ability to take a pair of forceps and go in there and snip out just the right favorites, maybe there's something to it, Kyle Ross.
Yes, Richard G. Morris. Yes.
the great inside joke keeps rolling here on the show. Yes. As such, we start out here with the Thursday night game this week. It's the 5-0 Falcons at the 1-4 Saints, 8:25 Eastern time on CBS and the NFL Network. Nance Sims-Wolfson on the call. This is a game where Atlanta is laying 3 points here. It's been a pretty solid three through the course of the week. This was one where I really did kind of struggle and go back and forth because, again, on paper, you really expect me to go the one direction, and I know you're expecting it to be good old road favorite Ricky here, but there are just inexplicable things that happen in the league, and we keep talking about it's an 8-8 league. You know, a league where the Falcons are 6-0 and the Saints are 1-5, as little respect as I have for them, somehow or another 5-1, 2-4 makes a little more sense to me. I'm starting with a very, very weak rationale, but I'm taking New Orleans in the three this week. I just went back and forth. It seems too obvious to pick the Falcons, so I'm going to be on the Saints.
Well, I like your rationale, and I would point out that, at least on my screen here, I'm seeing a number of opportunities to take 3.5 with the home dog in this instance, and even as many as 4 at the very square book of Bovada. And I'm with you. And this is actually my first recommendation. New Orleans, which shouldn't be.
I hope you got a better reason than I do.
I don't think it should be a huge surprise. It's pretty similar to your rationale. To me, it's a buy low, sell high opportunity. As far as selling high goes, one of the big storylines right now in the NFL is obviously the fact that we've still got 6 unbeaten teams. I mean, you never have 6 unbeaten teams this deep into the season.
Right.
So the way I think, obviously, a couple of them have got to go down. It's the way I handicap college, coincidentally. You know, I mean, teams are just going to lose this year. And I know, look, I went against the Saints last week as a road dog. That was the one favorite I did win with, Philadelphia. And I talked about how, you know, it was a real struggle for the Saints to get the cover against Dallas. There was a little bit of luck with the overtime session. But as much as they've fallen, they still scream nice value to me as a home dog. I mean, Drew Brees getting points in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, last year even, would have been unfathomable. As a matter of fact, I couldn't tell you the last time they were a home dog. Atlanta has been a favorite in New Orleans 3 times since the turn of the century. They have failed to cover all 3 times, losing the last 2 outright, one of them being the memorable Steve Gleason game after Hurricane Katrina. So historically, I don't think this is a great spot for Atlanta. New Orleans, a circle the wagon situation in prime time. Remember, their only win this year is a home primetime game. I know they lost 6 in a row at one point here at the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, but a win for New Orleans, most likely here, but take the points. I wouldn't go money line, take the points, especially with getting more than a field goal now. But I like New Orleans. First of 4 recommendations.
Let me ask you this. Is there a little bit – we talk about this generally, I think, earlier in the season sometimes with games, but I've got a little bit of a sense here, too, of what would we have thought coming out of training camp? What would we have thought the line would have been? What would we have thought the records would have been? It certainly would have been an Atlanta laying 3 on the road here because I think most of us had the Saints and the Falcons pegged fairly close in the standings. So is there something of that to it in terms of looking for the regression to the mean for both teams?
Oh, sure. I mean, yeah, that's one thing. And shame on me. I don't know it offhand, and I'm not going to stumble for 5 minutes to look for it, I guess, in a 45-minute program. That'd be a waste of time. But, the sportsbooks do put up advanced lines for these games preseason, and I'm pretty sure Atlanta would not be a road favorite of a field goal or higher over the summer. Now, you and I both thought New Orleans would be a middling team coming into the year. I said 8-8, and we both kind of liked Atlanta. I believe we both had them winning the division, but still, it just seems a little rich, especially too. I'm sure the listeners have heard this at some point during the week. I'm certainly not the first person to point it out. Atlanta has had to come from behind in the fourth quarter in 4 of their 5 wins. I mean, this Falcons team, and I know we're going to talk about the Bengals, I think, like next. So this is called a segue in the industry, Ricky.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen this before from Atlanta, this act. Atlanta, like Cincinnati, you know, ultimately how we judge them will be, you know, fair or unfair is going to be based on what they do in the playoffs, assuming they get there. And I do think both Atlanta and Cincinnati will obviously get there. So, right. So, yeah.
Okay. That was what I thought in that one. And, yes, we do have the Bengals coming up next. The 5-0 Bengals at the 3-2 Bills. 1 o'clock Eastern Time, Ralph Wilson Stadium on Sunday in Orchard Park, New York on CBS. Spiro Dita, Solomon Wilcox on the call. Cincinnati started off, they opened laying 1. It is up to 3.5 right now, I believe, in most places.
I think they were even a 1-point dog. I think they were a 1-point dog, were they not?
1-point dog. You know what? I think that's right. Yeah, 1-point dog. So it's been quite a spread on this one here. And, again, for a week where I have to say I didn't think I agonized too much, we're probably opening with the two games that I agonized on more than a lot of the other ones. My initial thoughts were, again, the Bills tend to be, at this point in time, I think a typical Rex Ryan team, a bully team. They'll punch you in the mouth if you're not any good or you're overrated. They kind of struggle with the teams who can stand up to them. The Bengals can stand up, I'd say, at this moment in time to just about anybody in the league. Keep going back and forth here, but maybe it's a little bit of the same thing we talked about in the last game here, too. These undefeated teams have got to go down at some point. So you're looking at a scenario where the Bills could win outright, or you still cover if they lose by a field goal. So with that being the case, two possibilities there. I'm going to take Buffalo and the 3.5.
Oh, I'm so pleasantly surprised. See, this is what I'm talking about. There's so much agreement in these games that you kind of waffle on. For me, this is a recommendation.
Okay.
This is my second of four. I think there's a ton of value thanks to the line move. I love to play against line moves. We've talked about this a number of times during the season. How many times have we seen the favorite and underdog role flip-flop and the quote-unquote new underdog takes care of business? You remember it?
Right.
Week one with the Vikings-Niners game. Week two, I believe it was Titans-Browns. I think, was maybe one other one that I'm missing here, but still a point. We've also talked in the past about how teams struggle the week after playing Seattle. And for Cincinnati, that was such a big win. This screams letdown. Now, I will say this about the Bills. I was probably the only person at the Lakewood Winking Wizard with his eyeballs, at least one eye for most of the time, focused on Bills-Titans. It was not exactly the game of a generation. But I said to my buddy during it, I'm like, the Titans are going to give this game away. They really kind of dominated the Bills in the first half of that game. Buffalo could get nothing going offensively. So there is a bit of a concern with the way the Bills played last week. But at home, I think they show up. See, I view Buffalo kind of differently as you. I think they, although they did, you know, kind of get bushwhacked by New England, I think they show up to play the big boys. And, again, Cincinnati, I'm not convinced this is a new Cincinnati, a new Andy Dalton. I think it's just very similar to where they were 2 years ago. Again, you know, shame on me for kind of failing to recognize that last year's team, which wasn't nearly as impressive, was kind of a result of losing both coordinators. Remember, we talked about that a lot last year.
Right.
Cincinnati lost both coordinators who went on to become head coaches. You know, they were also injured last year a lot. Kudos to Hugh Jackson. I think he's done a great job as offensive coordinator here. But you said it. Somebody's unbeaten's got to lose. I'm going against another one here. Buffalo +3 in the hook. Love the number.
Okay. All right. So we agree on the first two here. We may not on the next one, based on conversations we'd had previously and a late change in mind that I made on this one. It's the 2-3 Bears at the 0-5 Lions, 1 o'clock Eastern Time, Ford Field in Detroit on Sunday on Fox. Chris Myers, Rondé Barber, Jennifer Hale, past Lounge guest Jennifer Hale, on the call. And this is a game where Detroit, you and I talked about this previously. It's interesting that in today's day and age, maybe it's a little bit of a different world where an 0-5 team actually can be a favorite. Detroit is laying the standard 3 at home, up from 2.5 initially. Some people looking past records. I, like you initially, at least what you were talking about at the time, kind of thought, okay, this is their opportunity, kind of ripe, whatever. I got to tell you, and
the Lions,
sometimes
the Lions,
the Lions, yeah, for them to get off the schneid. in looking at the numbers, I always try to keep enough of an open mind for this. This has just jumped out at me. I mean, I know the Bears defensively, while not a juggernaut still, they're not the 85 Bears, but they're better than they have been. 185.8 yards per game given up through the air. And you're thinking to yourself, if there's a scenario for the Lions to get it going, it's that the passing game is going to assert itself. Megatron's always played pretty well against them, whatever. But the Bears, not as stout against the run, a little better against the pass. What have the Lions had some trouble with this year? Running the ball. So they don't seem to be very well poised to take advantage of where the Bears are a little bit softer. And where you would expect the Lions to pick it up a little bit is where the Bears have been pretty tough. So believe it or not, I'm going to go with the Bears in this one, the road dogs here. I got a couple of these here this week, the road dog special. So ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I am on the Bears getting the 3 points.
I, like you, have done a mea culpa midweek here and no longer am willing to endorse the Lions.
Oh, okay.
And I'll tell you why. I said this last week when I made the case for Chicago against Kansas City. I think it was like one of the few games we disagreed on, kind of. Shame on me for not giving it out as an official recommendation on the Bears. But I think the way the Bears are being viewed still is wrong. I don't think this is one of the worst teams in the league, really.
I kind of agree with you. Those first three games they had to play were brutal.
Well, and I think that they're hideous. The reason they're viewed that way, and I said this last week again, so I'm just repeating myself, was those six awful quarters they got from Jimmy Clausen.
Right.
With Jay Cutler in there, they've been pretty good. They beat Oakland. They beat Kansas City. Now, obviously, there were some extenuating circumstances with Jamal Charles. We'll talk about that later. But they also, earlier in the year, hung tough with Green Bay. They were winning in the second half of that game. That was probably Green Bay's toughest game to date. They were trading touchdowns in the first half with Arizona until Cutler went down. I just think that this team is better than they're being given credit for. Detroit just stinks. If you factor out defensive touchdowns, I mean, they haven't scored 20 points once this year. I do not want to lay points with them. So no thank you. No thank you. I'm passing on this game now. Because, I mean, I guess I can't completely disregard my initial thought, that being, well, you know, Detroit's got to start winning a couple here. They might win, but again, I just can't lay points with a winless team. There's no value there. And I can just make a better case for Chicago. So at least
better case without a recommendation, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Correct. All right. Up next, another real interesting one. Two awful teams in the AFC South. It's the 1-4 Texans at the 1-4 Jags. 1 o'clock Eastern Time Sunday, Everbank Field in Jacksonville on CBS. Adam Archuleta, Tom McCarthy on the call. And this is a game that has vacillated a little bit, opened as a pick. At a certain point, it went to Houston -1 on the road here, and it has gone back to being a pick as of when you and I are speaking right now. So basically, we're just looking for a straight-up winner in this game. And one of the things I was looking at, again, I look for the things that kind of jump out at me in my analysis as I'm going through for each team. And the fact that the Texans' defense to this point in time haven't had a lot of turnovers, haven't had a lot of takeaways through this point in the season. The pass rush really hasn't been there as much as you would really, really expect. I just don't expect that to continue on for any longer. It's funny because in our conversation that we had in our last mini episode with Robert Flores, we were talking a little bit of fantasy football, and I made sure to put over that FantasyDraftHelp.com did have DeMarco Murray as one of the five strongest marginal plays of last week, of guys that I expected to kind of turn it around. And even in the course of a 16-game season, there's still room for regression or progression to the mean, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
I just think the Texans' defense has been too mediocre for too long, and this looks like the game where they turn it around. Give me the Texans.
I hate this game. I got nothing for you here. Loser here is clearly in the driver's seat for worst team in the AFC, don't you think? I mean, these are probably the two worst teams in the AFC. Houston's one win was kind of an ugly 19-9 decision over Tampa Bay. Jacksonville surprised Miami, who obviously has already fired its coach. I just can't make, you know, Blake Bortles is actually has probably played better than either Houston quarterback, which speaks volumes about the current situation. Whoever wins here, it will be a rare win, is all I can say. These two teams are not good, and I cannot make a case for either one right now at all. Sorry.
It's funny when you talk about the quarterbacks. I agree with you. I'd rather have Blake Bortles, certainly, than Brian Hoyer. Having said that, it's Blake Bortles who has to go up against J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney, so sometimes there's a little more to it than that.
Is Jadeveon Clowney still in the league?
Again, you know.
I had heard about him being drafted one overall.
You talk about dude. That rubber band has been pulled back about as far as it possibly could be. Hey, if that guy comes out shot out of a cannon and has five sacks, I wouldn't blink. So that could very well happen.
I'll tell you what I'd be shocked about if Ryan Mallett ever played well. Told you about that guy. He's no good.
Neither's Brian Hoyer, though. So,
no, he isn't.
Look,
I mean, the key for the Houston Texans franchise, I mean, let's just come out and say it. No team is going to just blatantly tank and suck on purpose. But for Houston, it wouldn't be the worst thing. They've got Bill O'Brien as a head coach. This team just needs to draft high and take a quarterback. And I think they'll be
fine.
O'Brien's
really overrated. He's really overrated.
I like Bill O'Brien. I'm
not impressed. Don't they still have Tom Savage on the roster? Why not give him a look?
Have you ever seen Tom Savage play? He's not very good either.
Well, I'm just thinking something different here.
Yeah, I mean, it's not good. They've never had a franchise quarterback here. I mean, Matt Schaub, for Christ's sake, was the closest thing they ever had to a franchise quarterback. So
he was very good for a long time, but yeah, not
by the way, I was thinking midweek, last week, as I had written those kind of quarter pull articles there for the site.
Yes.
The
FDH Lounge .blogspot.com. People need to check that out on the FDH Lounge.
Well, you know,
if you haven't already.
You know my flip-flopping liberal self. I've already changed a few opinions on those. But anyway, I was thinking my next time I write for you, I've got to revisit this chaos theory thing that you touched on with the AFC and why it just never seems to happen.
Interesting.
Have you noticed? I think we're going to have probably five of certainly at least four, but at least five repeat playoff entrants. And when you look at the quarter, I mean, I just bring this up because these two teams don't really have strong play out of the quarterback position. It's because of the quarterbacks. I mean, look at the teams that never make the playoffs in the AFC. They get nothing out of the quarterbacks.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, the funny thing is that kind of takes us into the next game, although at least one team has a hope for the future in that regard. It's the 1-3 Dolphins at the 1-3 Titans. 1 o'clock Eastern time from Nissan Stadium in Nashville on CBS. Andrew Catalan, Steve Tasker, Steve Berline on the call. Again, the Titans being the team that at least has the future, hope for the future at quarterback with Marcus Mariota. And having said that, they are 2.5-point favorites over Miami. And, I struggled to get any kind of statistical nuggets or anything like that kind of jumping out at me. And I'm going to just play it as simple as this, and that is – you got Miami coming off of that bye that they so desperately needed.
And a coaching change.
Well, yeah, exactly. I liked your one Facebook comment, too, about Dan Carpenter and these medium T-shirts. That was outstanding. But the thing about that is, and I think it would be an overreaction for Tennessee to have a similar kind of X-Lax moment here, but the Dolphins have had theirs. And of the two teams that are kind of struggling right now, the Dolphins just flushed out Joe Philbin. There's bound to be a honeymoon effect. Give me Miami on the road getting the 2.5 here.
See, I was really hoping the Titans were going to pull off the upset last week against Buffalo because it would have created, I think, a little more value here on the Dolphins, who are off the bye. This team has fallen quite hard. But as I kind of detailed in that article, it's easy to see why. I mean, they're just that team that – and I think Chicago was the team last year – that we all erroneously fall in love with leading up to the season. You know, I mean, you had them as a – we both had them as a wild card coming into this year. And the bottom line is they spent all that money on Sue, but there's nothing really else on the defense. So, you know, they're not – they can't really take advantage of what Sue brings to the table. Ryan Tannehill has not made any kind of leap. You know, hats off to Jason Jones, who always ripped this, who always ripped Tannehill. It looks like he might be right on that one. They're just not a very good team. If Houston and Jacksonville are 1-2 in terms of worst in the AFC, these two are probably 3-4. And I'll say this: Tennessee has outgained all four opponents. They should have a better record than they do. So that also has me shying away from this game. By the way, it's not Dan Carpenter. I've made that same mistake a number of times. He was a former kicker for the Dolphins. It's Dan Campbell.
Dan Campbell. Yeah. Wrong.
I've made that mistake like three or four times in things I've written during the week. It throws you off because, the Dolphins used to have a kicker named Dan Carpenter. I was not impressed by Dan Campbell's first press conference. The whole, there's a fine line between playing dirty and playing tough, and we're going to walk that line. But, there was a little bit of Mike Singletary, I thought, in his themes, and that's not a good thing.
Well, Joe Philbin coached like he was in a coma, so they're going for the
other
side.
Joe Philbin wasn't good, but I could be completely wrong. I don't know the man from Adam, but, I'd be surprised if the former tight end coach Dan Campbell was the head coach here in Miami at the start of 2016. And, again, the Dolphins, poor ownership. They're one of those organizations that, just never really seems to put it all together.
That's exactly right. Up next here, this is kind of uncanny. Sunday, 1 o'clock Eastern time from MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford is the 2-3 Redskins at the 3-1 Jets. You have five-time lounge guest Kenny Albert on the call along with Daryl Moose Johnston and the delicious Holly Saunders. Kenny Albert, who, to break kayfabe here, as we are taping this, is broadcasting game 5 of the American League Division Series. So a long, long week for this five-time lounge guest. An interesting line here, Jets laying 6. It had opened at 5.5. There were a couple plays this week that I had where, again, if I was going to be like you and have variables as far as the number of picks, I would have had more than the 3. This one just missed my cut as far as being a recommendation. I'm all over the Jets as I look at this.
Wow.
That are similar in some ways. And the Jets, to me right now, I give them one of the 2 wild cards in the AFC. As we stand right now, both teams are good in the running game. There's not much to separate them there. Defensively, the Redskins at this point are good, surprisingly so. The Jets are a better version of what the Redskins do. The Jets are better than that. And offensively, and this is the faint praise it's intended to be, Ryan Fitzpatrick is a slightly rich man's Kirk Cousins. Yes, that is faint praise. So the Jets, as I look all the way around here, just kind of have the edges in this game. I like them. I think this is a game where, we separate the wheat from the chaff a little bit. The Jets go to 4-1, Redskins to 2-4.
See, this for me was the hardest call of the week.
Okay.
And I just kind of scratched it off. Both teams are better than what you think. The Jets have actually outgained all 4 opponents this year. Washington outgained their first 4 opponents before last week's overtime loss in Atlanta. I mentioned earlier in the program, you and I were both on the Redskins last week. And, I think I'm going to pat myself on the back here. How about how in my analysis I said I was kind of violating one of my axioms by saying, well, a week after he played well, I'm still going to ride Kirk Cousins just because they were getting enough points. Well, boy, did that game play out that way because we got bad Kirk Cousins in overtime throwing the pick 6 to lose. But still, they were, thankfully taking more than a score and were able to cover. The Jets are off a bye. I agree with you that they are certainly in line for a wild card in the AFC, especially if they win here. I think more people will talk about it. Along with Buffalo, who we've already talked about, the X factor for the Jets coming into this year was quarterback play. Yeah. You didn't know what they would get. The Bills, hats off to them, made the, I don't want to say daring, I think that might be a little overstating, but they made the right choice going with Tyrod Taylor over Matt Castle and E.J. Manuel, because you know what Castle is, you know what Manuel is, and
right.
both instances it's not very good. The Jets kind of had a little bit of dumb luck, didn't they? I mean, I don't want to wish ill
bit,
on
yeah,
another human
yeah.
being. I don't want to wish ill on another human being that's not named Curt Schilling. But, you know, the best thing that happened to the Jets was Geno Smith's jaw getting broken. It really was. Because
yeah.
Ryan Fitzpatrick, for a second straight season, has been very competent under center. And you look at this team, good defense, good special teams, good offensive line. They got two pretty decent receivers, good running back. I mean, there's really not a lot to – there's really nothing to not like about the Jets, which is kind of shocking, quite frankly.
Right.
But the price is a little rich for me. You know, the Jets are not
okay.
a team I'm ready to back yet in the favorite role, especially laying nearly a touchdown.
Okay. All right. I have to note here, I've apparently fallen way down on the job here on pacing. 8 games to go. Up next, it's the 4-1 Cardinals at the 3-2 Steelers. Brenneman, Aikman, Schrager on the call for Fox, 1 o'clock Eastern Time, Heinz Field in Pittsburgh, Arizona, weighing 3 to Pittsburgh on the road. Long story short, I can't see the Steelers at 4-2 with Mike Vick. You know, they got away with one Monday night. I know that
yeah, they did.
Arizona's got to come across the country, but I can't see them at 4-2 without Raplesberger being in there. So while Arizona's got to come across
that.
The country, Pittsburgh is coming back across the country on a short week. Give me the Cards.
My, oh, my, have times changed. Who would have ever thought in a game between Arizona and Pittsburgh, the public would be all over Arizona?
Yep.
And they are. I'm staying away because I'm with you. I think the Steelers were very fortunate last week. Arizona, I concede. I bow to the altar of Bruce Arians. They are just a much better team than I gave them credit for this year. They're a much better team than the last 2 years, although I will point out that even if they do win here, it would be another win against, you know, an opponent with issues. They have not really beaten what I would call a good team yet, Arizona.
Okay.
So
I'm sure it'll impress you at some point
here. Let's keep that in mind. Let's keep
okay.
that in mind about Arizona.
Sure.
They have not beaten a quality foe yet.
All right. Well, neither have the 4-0 Panthers. They're up next here at the 2-3 Seahawks, 4 o'clock Eastern time, CenturyLink Field in Seattle on Fox. Cast Lounge guest Sam Rosen with John Lynch and the delicious Pam Oliver crawling the sidelines. And this is one where Seattle is laying 6.5 up from 5 initially. And, this is one where, much like the Lions game, the public really not taking the records into account, nor should they, I think. And this is a situation where Seattle is going to come out really frustrated after what happened last week against Cincinnati. Your Dewey Defeats Truman tweet to me mid-game, or text to me, was priceless. But Seattle's got to be about
as pissed off. I can't believe I fell into your trap. You're the one. You're the one. I made fun of you last week for all that mid-game texting you do.
Well,
and
yeah.
here I do it.
Yeah.
It was just because I was so pissed off about Jamal Charles getting injured that I just wanted to start saying negative things to you. So,
well, my sense here is, as instrumental as Greg Olsen's been in the passing game for Carolina, you think Seattle's got the capacity to take him away if they want to? Absolutely. And then what's Cam Newton left with? So give me Seattle laying a 6.5.
I'm not going to disagree with you here. You know, Seattle laying less than 7 at home seems like a pretty good value. Carolina is off the bye, though. Seattle definitely has issues offensively.
Mm-hmm.
When you take away the special team scores, I don't think they've scored more than 20 in a game this year. So I'm staying away here. I'm staying away.
Okay.
Although I would like to point out I still do have the Seahawks number 5 in my power rankings, despite a losing record. So I think they're going to be okay. I think they're going to be okay and win this game and continue on to a double-digit win season.
That's right where I got him at the Lounge Multimedia Magazine is number 5 also. It's the
2-3
Chargers
okay.
at the 5-0 Packers, 4:25 Eastern time at Lambeau in Green Bay on CBS. Nance Sims-Wolfson on the call. Green Bay is laying 10 in this one, up from 9.5 initially. And, again, this is one of these ones where, again, you know, me being a bitter clinger to the Chargers, who have been the beneficiary of a lot of bad luck thus far this season, I don't think this game is quite the gimme for Green Bay that everybody thinks it is. They may very well win, but if they do, it'll be a shootout. It'll be one of those 42-38 kind of games. Give me San Diego to stay underneath it.
You know, if I had access to Chargers practice this week, maybe I'd be more willing to give some sort of recommendation on this, but I don't. And
okay.
So I won't. I'd really love to take the temperature of that room right now. What a gag job that was Monday night. One of my two losses last week. A gag job. I thought the game was over when they went up 17-10. They failed to close the deal. And I got to tell you this about your San Diego Chargers. This offensive line is heinous. They almost make watching Phillip Rivers painful. Like Phillip Rivers, I never thought I could ever say would be unwatchable because I love Phillip Rivers. But, God, is it a struggle behind just this awful, awful offensive line. Between that offensive line and the first 3.5 quarters of Mike Vick, it was a horrible Monday night game last week. Just awful. I'm not stepping in front of the Green Bay. Yeah.
Well, since I made that pick, they have suffered a lot of injuries on that offensive line.
Yeah, that is true.
So
That's true. That's absolutely true. Yeah, I'm not saying that that wasn't meant to say you're an idiot. I'm just saying that, you know, the bottom line is San Diego's offensive line. I mean, the fact of the matter is their offensive line is hideous right now. It's just beyond description. And I'm not stepping in front of the Green Bay train in Lambeau. I mean, they win these games pretty big. So we shall see.
Right. Two more games before the big three. We start with one that was a borderline recommendation for me, the 4-0 Pats at the 3-2 Colts. 8:30 Eastern time Sunday night, Lucas Oil Stadium in Indy. It's the Sunday night game on NBC at Michaels, Collinsworth, Tafoya on the call. This is one where New England is laying 7.5 up from 7 initially here. And like everybody and their grandmother, I'm on the Pats because I think this is a big, hard to say revenge spot for a team that won the AFC Championship as handily as they did last year. But for a whining, petulant, us-against-the-world, conspiracy-minded team, they really do think that the Colts screwed them somehow. And that's what Belichick's going to be drumming into their heads. And, the Colts, to me, they're basically a glorified version of last year's Carolina Panthers. They may not win a game outside of that crappy division, but they'll win just enough games probably to win that division. So this is a non-divisional game. They won't win. Pats roll. I don't care about the 7.5.
See, I can't endorse the favorite of this size because everyone is going to be on the path. At the same time, we talked about the predictable patterns in Indianapolis, and it is one of the most unbelievable patterns I've ever seen since I've been watching the NFL for 25 or whatever years. All they do is win division games close. All three of their wins this year by 7 points or less against the heinous AFC South. So, you know, they're a flawed team. New England's going to be fired up. They do have a history of really sticking it down the throat of these teams they're pissed off at. So that's why I cannot, in good conscience, back this particular home dog because Belichick and Brady, maybe. Belichick and Brady could be out for blood.
Speaking of primetime games, it's going to be a wild one Monday night at the Link in Philly, the 3-2 Giants at the 2-3 Eagles, 8:30 Eastern time on ESPN, Tirico, Gruden, Salters on the call. Philadelphia laying 4.5 in this one, up from 3.5 initially. My bottom line on is this. With the Giants, the offenses are going to be the story of the game here. With the Giants, I know what I'm getting a lot more than I know about with the Eagles. The Eagles, again, you know, they have that kind of upside. They get everything going. They could have put up 42, 45 points and win this game. But who's more likely to be in the high 20s or the 30s on a given week? It's the Giants. So give me the Giants, and I will gladly take the 4.5. Thank you.
See, I like both of these teams more than I think most people do. The Giants, by the way, had a double-digit lead in all five games.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the Eagles, I'm not ready to sell them yet down the river either. So I'm laying off on this one. This is a tough game. It's interesting that more people are on the Giants in terms of number of bets, but the line's actually gone up. That's kind of a signal that maybe there could be some smart money on the Eagles. So we shall
see. Could be. We go to the big three. We start with one that's very painful for me, and what is a revenge spot for the three AFC championship games at the end of the 80s
here.
I do not look for my beloved Browns to capitalize. Denver is laying 4, had been up from 3.5 initially at Cleveland Browns Stadium, as I still call it, on CBS. Ian Eagle, Dan Fouts, Evan Washburn on the call, 1 o'clock Eastern time, Denver laying the 4. Props to Josh McCown for what he's done in recent weeks, but I think there's a difference between finding holes in some of the defenses that he's been working with and having this particular dance partner in the Broncos. And I think this is where Shiznit gets real for this Browns offense. Even if Peyton Manning continues to be as disappointing as he's been, and this Browns defense could be just the tonic for him, it doesn't matter. I think the Broncos win by more than the 4. So this is one of my big 3 recommendations.
See, this is the opposite of that Monday night game. I don't like either of these teams in this situation. The Browns, off a shocking outright win against Baltimore, come from behind fashion last week. They fooled me. But I'm not interested in Denver as a road favorite right now, not with this offense. They'll need to get the run game going here, which, you know, against this Browns defense, may be a very strong possibility, because despite all that talent, which you keep citing, I mean, everybody runs on the Browns defense, for crying out loud. So I'm scared here, because the Broncos, if not for some defensive touchdowns, quite frankly, we would not be talking about them as one of the 6 remaining unbeaten. So I'm staying off here.
There is a lot of talent, certainly on paper, on this Browns defense, but the biggest underachieving unit, I think, in the league, I think everyone would have to say, particularly when you peg it to the salaries involved. There's another revenge spot here that I think is going to go better for the team involved. It's the Super Bowl IV revenge game. The 1-4 Chiefs at the 2-2 Eagles. I'm sorry, 2-2 Vikings. 1 o'clock Eastern time, TCF Bank Stadium in Minneapolis. USA Today Sports Weekly does not list the announcers. Thanks, guys. But anyways, Minnesota is laying 4 in this one. 4.5 initially, had been down to 3.5. It's bounced around a little bit. You know me. I'm big on the Vikings. This is a devastating spot for the Chiefs. They now don't have Jamal Charles in there. He has figured in very large, particularly as Alex Smith has seemed to diminish in the passing game. Do I think Alex Smith is suddenly going to find himself here against the front 7 of the Vikes? I do not. Give me Minnesota to cover the 4.
Shoot, we're running low on time. I disagree, and this is a recommendation for me on the Chiefs.
Okay.
I don't disagree with anything you just said, but this game represents a fundamental difference in the way I still think you and I view some of these matchups. I look
at,
first of all, I'm not nearly as high on the Vikings as you are, as we all know.
Right.
Number two, man, I mean, given the Charles injury, to me, I look at this line and say, who wouldn't take the Vikings? So that just intrigues me so much on the other side. Kansas City is a team that has way underperformed. I think they were shell-shocked with the Charles injury last week, really gave one away at home against Chicago. The Vikings as favorites is just not appealing to me at all. As a matter of fact, I will recommend taking the points with Kansas City in what could be a surprise effort, as Super Bowl IV maybe isn't avenged after all.
All right, so we disagree on that one. We go to my 1,000-star gold-plated Lock of the Millennium for NFL Week 6. It's the 1-4 Ravens at the 1-4 49ers, 4:25 Eastern Time, Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara on CBS. Once again, USA Today Sports Weekly, not listing the announcers. But Baltimore is laying a scant 2.5 in this one here, had been 2 initially. You look at the records, both 1-4. One of these teams is not like the other. And, oh, by the way, that team, word on the street, is they're getting a ton of dirt on the team they're playing from the certain former head coach of that team. So if you're putting down here, you know what I mean? Baltimore is going to have everything they need to get ready for this one. In the Super Bowl rematch game from 2013, the 49ers obviously will not get the revenge here. Baltimore, in this spot, staves off the revenge, covers the 2.5.
Let's bring it all full circle, Rick Morris. I said I had 4 recommendations on this program. Mm-hmm. I've given out 3.
Okay.
I said I would give out a favorite as one of those recommendations. The 3 recommendations I have given out so far are all underdogs. So I have 1 question for you.
Yeah.
Are you ready? The number of times in the 4 years I have done this program with you that I have given out a road favorite as a recommendation can probably fit on 1 hand. Let's give 1 for the thumb, shall we? Baltimore. Love them. They are way undervalued here. way undervalued. I didn't even think about the Harbaugh connection. My God, I love this play even more now that you brought that up. So Baltimore, a rare road favorite by me, Baltimore. I think you can still get them only laying one at five dimes, too, by the way. I was
nice.
Personal about that.
Gotta like that. Road favorite Kyle joins me on that. Your other picks, KC, Buffalo, New Orleans. My other picks, Minnesota and Denver.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.